place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going.
It is 6:12 on a somber day in America, but we can choose to remember the good stuff. Remember when we got along? Kinda. It was 18 years ago today that the world changed forever when the attacks on 9/11 happened. Think about this. Little babies that were either about to be born or just born then graduated from high school this summer. Kindergartners graduated from college. If you were graduating from college then, you're 40 years old now. You know, time flies is more than a cliche. It's a fact. And here we sit in 2019, maybe more divided than we've ever been. Well, at least since the Civil War. So, you know, maybe take today and try to get along. It's a crazy idea, huh? And remembering those who passed on that day, almost 3,000 people, why don't we just for them try to get along today? I'm in. You in?
I am so in, Steve.
Dave, you in?
I'm absolutely in, and I still really thought we had turned a corner after 9/11 and the way we treated each other.
And lasted about 3 months.
Yeah.
So
maybe Mary, a little longer than that, but barely.
Mary, are you in?
I'm in. But you know what? I think more people volunteer today than they've ever before.
I think that's true.
I think that is something that has continued, for sure.
That may be an outgrowth of 9/11.
Yes.
Steve, here's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to report the news.
Yeah, but I'm in. I'm completely in, and I will ask that if you really feel like you need to do something physically today, go volunteer somewhere.
Absolutely.
That would be a good day to remember all of those who died.
Got a call yesterday. We had a big, high-powered phone meeting. President Trump is scheduled to speak this morning at 7:40, and there was a question about whether or not we ought to carry the speech. I've made it clear how I feel about the president's behavior and activities, but he's the president of the United States, and today's 9/11. So we will carry the speech because it's the right thing to do. At 7:40 this morning, because it is time specifically to meet morning show demands, not this one, you know, morning show network, morning shows and other things, it's likely to be on time. So we're planning on a 7:40 hit. Speech is scheduled to be about 18 minutes. I truly hope it's not a campaign speech. That would be unfortunate, but we'll find out together. Unless, Steve, you know of the text being leaked already.
I have not seen text yet.
Okay. Also on the program today, Stan Bowman, general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, scheduled to trade Dave in just a few minutes.
Whatever.
Got a canine companions thing today, Dave. We hadn't had a dog in studio in a while.
No, it's been a while.
Yeah.
They don't like the altitude.
And fair, what could be true. Karen Conti will be on the show in a few minutes talking a lot. John Williams, your Hall of Famer, or Walk of Famer. Well, it could be a Hall of Famer. Your Walk of Famer going in on Friday. John Williams will join us after Andrea was here. It was delightful to see Andrea. Wasn't it delightful?
It was delightful. She was upset with me because I did not respond to her text in a timely manner.
Well, no, you responded to her text message while she was here.
Yeah, but it was the text she sent me on Friday.
That was the part that was hilarious, is that she said she called you out. She was sitting across from you.
And then you responded to the text from last Friday. Such a guy.
That's how we roll around here, G.
Adorable. Thing to do. It's adorable.
And then they always respond with one word, yep. Or so. Okay.
Well, I just don't like it when it's just the K and not the O.
Well, people are short on time.
I mean, does that really save you that much time?
It saves you data.
I feel like the K is a little bit of a sarcastic kind of...
Exactly.
Agreed, Grzanich.
100%.
Same page,
I
buddy.
I'm a lot into that.
I always like the thumbs up.
Yeah, also a cop out.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Better than the K.
I use it all the time.
With the thumbs up. I like
it's a cop out.
Yeah. It's more optimistic.
It's 6:17. We're going to try to stay on time on this show for the next few minutes at least.
That'll be nice to Super Joe. See, you're being nice to Super
Joe. I'm working with Super Joe.
And look at how cute he is today. He got a haircut.
His haircut looks amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That is very nice of you guys to say.
What a handsome fella.
Who was first to notice, Joe?
I noticed right away.
Yeah. Everybody's been saying it pretty much right away.
You guys didn't notice my haircut.
Women notice right away, I think, because we're observant and smarter.
You didn't notice my haircut.
You didn't get a haircut.
No, I didn't.
I never noticed my husband's. He gets mad.
He gets fake mad. It's LifeLock, ready to help you out of your problems. It turns out a major way to pair speakers, printers, and numerous other devices. You've heard of Bluetooth. It's not because of your dental hygiene. No, it's something that you use almost every day. Well, I would say every day. Do you know anybody that doesn't use Bluetooth? I mean, Bluetooth pairs everything. Bluetooth could pair pairs.
I have multiple Bluetooth devices.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Just don't wear the Bluetooth all day device in your ear.
Turns out, have you seen the people that still have...
Sorry, I throw you. I knew I was going to throw you off. I'm sorry.
Have you seen the guy? And it's, no, it's always a guy. The guy that has the 2010 era earpiece.
Yes.
Yeah.
To hook up with the phone, or he's still wired into the phone, and he's talking just loud enough to make sure you know he's important.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not me, by the way.
Viv's got a funny story about Bluetooth headphones as well that we can get to later.
Okay. I probably should finish this LifeLock.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good thing LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security. Yeah, I saw Hamp last night on a golf course.
At night?
Well, it wasn't dark.
Oh, okay. We said last night.
It was late. Like, you know what else was there? Cuz. Hamp and Cuz.
Where was this?
Was it White Eagle?
Where was Dave's invite?
Dave's invite? I wasn't playing with him.
Oh.
No, just honestly, here's what happened. Hamp in an orange shirt looks like a building in an orange shirt.
Yes.
And he's driving up a fairway, and I'm coming down, like, the 15th fairway, sort of perpendicular to 10, and I'm coming down 10, and I putt out on 10. I'm going to the 11th tee, and the 15th fairway is perpendicular to the 11th tee. And a giant human in an orange shirt goes, "Aah!"
Hilarious.
I didn't know what he said.
Did you?
I don't even know if it was a word.
Did you jump?
I didn't know it was Hamp.
Were you frightened? I would have been frightened.
No, I was frightened. I went, "Who's the idiot?" And then when I finished playing, and I get to the parking lot, and I see Hamp and Cos pull up, and it's the giant human in the orange shirt. And it was Hamp. They were playing with a couple of guys. I'm not sure.
He recognized you? Is that why?
Yeah, that's why he was yelling. Okay. I hope, unless he was having some sort of medical incident. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was yelling because he saw me.
Wow. That's going to be drama later. I never thought about this. What if you run into a golf friend that you play with a lot, and then they didn't invite you to play? This could be...
As a guy?
Yeah.
You would just go, "Dude, what's the deal?"
Oh, okay.
And then it'd be over.
I know what else you're going to say.
I wish you guys would stop interrupting me. LifeLock. LifeLock wants you to know that with Norton Security, they can protect you against anything, including Hamp yelling at you on the golf course. LifeLock with Norton Security means they're going to see threats you're going to miss. You go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code LifeLock. Get 10% off your first year. That's the promo code LifeLock at LifeLock.com, 1-800-LIFELOCK for 10% off. I think LifeLock might be too close to me. They're sending me lots of emails and stuff.
That's why now you've looped me in, to divert their...
I said LifeLock. I know you're there. I just need a little space. It's all good there.
Smothering you.
It's LifeLock, 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com.
Celebrate 25 years of Chicago Television's number one morning show. Watch a live two-hour special full of memorable moments on the WGN-TV Morning News 25th Anniversary Special, Tuesday night, September 17th at 7.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, President Trump announced Tuesday John Bolton is out, the mustache leaves, and a new national security advisor could be named soon, or possibly not at all. You'll hear a lot about that in political news today, and it was done on Twitter, because that's what all the cool kids are doing. They're firing people on Twitter. By the way, Bolton says he resigned. Bolton says he offered his resignation the night before. Trump says he fired him. I'm going to go with Bolton to block. Because even though Bolton has lied regularly as well, we don't have an incident of 13,000 documented lies in the Washington Post for Bolton. So, and by the way, who cares? In the big picture, who cares if he resigned or got fired? We just would like somebody to be in Trump's ear before he does something that... really can't be turned back. And again, none of this goes against my 9/11 message at the top. This is reporting the news.
with a little bit of me. Michael Jordan announced on Tuesday he's going to donate $1 million in relief efforts to the Bahamas. He said in a statement of devastated sea destruction that Hurricane Dorian has brought to the Bahamas, where I own property and visit frequently. What's that giant hotel in the Bahamas that Michael used to go to all the time, with the casino?
The Atlantis.
Yeah, the Atlantis. Yeah. And I think he bought a giant place somewhere near that giant hotel. So that's unfortunate, but very generous of Michael to do that.
Yes.
Next up, Apple's rollout yesterday, iPhones, Apple Watches, and an iPad. Oh, my. Company also revealed launch timing and pricing details for its new subscription services, Apple TV and Apple Arcade. The new iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro start shipping on September 20th. There's also a trio of new smartphones. The iPhone 11 for $699, the 11 Pro for $999, and the iPhone 11 Pro Max is $1099. What do you get for the extra $100 for the Pro Max? You iPhone people?
I haven't looked into it yet.
Probably some camera adjustment.
Yeah, it's probably like one more feature. That's the thing that's like.
Well, $699 is in the new pricing of phones. That's relatively cheap.
Yeah, you just get a container. You don't actually get any phone with that.
Oh, that's the actual case.
You just get the buttons, and you have to put it together yourself.
Some assembly required.
Didn't know that. Next, New England Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown's been accused of raping a former trainer. The lawsuit alleges that Brown sexually assaulted the woman in three separate incidents, two in June of 2017, one in May of 2018. A million questions go with this. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown, more than a loose cannon, documented. This woman made several attempts to borrow money from Antonio Brown and had an off-again-on-again relationship of some sorts with Brown, which would make this case tough to prove, but also makes it interesting to bring up to Karen Conti, because no means no, regardless of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And when a woman says it happened, you have to take her seriously. But how does a woman prove that?
Right.
If all this extra evidence could be brought up to damage her credibility.
And no's can happen after a series of yeses. Like, you could have a relationship with somebody and then decide no.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you guys.
Yeah.
You know when no is no. I don't care how horned up you are. Right. You know what no is.
Right.
Amen, Steve Cochran.
Well, it's a fact. Next, the Art Institute of Chicago has hired a Barcelona architectural firm to craft a master plan that could bring profound transformation to the Michigan Avenue Museum in the coming years. Prize-winning firm Barozzi Vega has been... a tip for you young talk show hosts. If you have no idea how to pronounce something, do it with an accent, because half the audience will think you're right.
Roll the R.
Barozzi Vega has been... I can't roll an R. How do you roll an R? Thank you very much. Mm. Has been quietly studying the institution's sprawling campus for the past 2 years, and they think they're going to do something dramatic. I don't understand architecture. I just know Mr. Brady was an architect.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't get it. I appreciate it.
What does this mean? They're going to tear it down and start... What does this mean?
I don't know, but it's profound transformation to the Michigan Avenue Museum.
I didn't know it was an inward-looking museum. I don't know what that means.
I don't think they can tear a lot of it down. I mean, they're not going to tear anything down, because a good part of that is probably historic.
Maybe
it'll be like the Louvre, and there'll be like some sort of glass structure that is added to enhance the...
Maybe just painting.
Yeah, just put some new paintings.
I don't think they'd fly someone from Barcelona for that.
And finally, this work begins on new roads connecting Chinatown to downtown. The Wells-Wentworth connector is part of the massive new South Loop development called the 78. Expected to sit on 62 acres bordered by Roosevelt Clark 16th and the Chicago River. Sidewalks, a raised bike path, trees, extra bright lighting, residential units, retail, restaurants, and a 7-acre park.
I was in Chinatown yesterday. There's so much stuff building there.
Well, that would be, and what they're describing here would be very cool for that neighborhood. That neighborhood is beaten down for years.
But it's you know what? Right now, it's making a comeback.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that whole redo of that neighborhood is a cool idea.
And good dim sum. Yum, yum.
And good dim sum to you. That's your top 6 and 6.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti's a lawyer. She doesn't care how many jokes are on the internet. She's a lawyer, damn it. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning, everybody.
Are you on the radio Sunday night?
I am not on the radio, that we are being preempted by some sporting event, but the following week I will be back on from 7 to 9 as usual.
All right, and we can also, of course, call you at any time, regardless of our amount of bail that's needed, and what number would that be on?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com.
By the way, why do you hate text messaging?
I don't know. I just never liked it. My phone doesn't give me the message that there's a text, and I miss it. I don't know. I'm just not a texter.
We have got to get you into 2019. You're too busy working.
I know.
All right. Let me jump to a big story, and I don't want to ask you specifically about this story because, you know, you're not handling the case, but the larger topic, and that's this Antonio Brown mess. Antonio Brown is a certifiable lunatic as a NFL player, and he's caused all sorts of problems for his teams, and he's lost a couple of big jobs and seemed to be thrilled that he was going to end up with the world champion New England Patriots. Now, a former trainer comes forward and says he raped her on three separate occasions. So here's the general questions. How does a woman prove she was sexually assaulted on three separate occasions if she's a grown woman with the ability not to go back the second and third time if she didn't report it the first time? And that all goes to credibility, as does the fact that she had attempted to borrow money from him for a business and various other things. In my world of view, none of those things should matter if, in fact, she was raped. You could be a really bad character, a really shady person, but rape is rape. So how does a woman prove that when her credibility is easily attacked?
This is going to be hard. First of all, I just want to say that I generally believe women when they say they've been raped and assaulted. I generally believe it because the chances are that it did happen, and the statistics bear that out. This is problematic, though, because, first of all, why weren't criminal charges brought? And again, you're right. Three separate occasions, I think two separate places. So why did she go back? Why did she go back to train him? If someone is sexually assaulting me or masturbating, which is one of the horrible allegations, you just don't deal with that person anymore, right? I mean, so that is going to be very suspect. And that, how does she prove it? She testifies. She'll testify that what happened. She'll give details. She'll probably say she told other people around her. Those people will testify that she gave contemporaneous accounts of what happened. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Now, this isn't a criminal case. It's a civil case. So all she has to prove is by a preponderance of the evidence, which is just slightly more true than not true that it happened, as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt. But I think this lawsuit, it has trouble, has a lot of trouble in it because of all the things that you said and because of the time that went by.
Now, the flip side of that is being accused as a man. There have certainly been cases where women trying to make money have done this. And it's a small minority of it, but then they ruin it for everyone else who really has been attacked. But what does a man do to defend himself if he's actually innocent?
Well, he has a good lawyer who makes the arguments that we're making, which is, why in the world would you continue to do business with me, ask me for money? And listen, the fact, you know, the big argument's going to be, we're in civil court. What do you want from me? You want from me money. Why did you ask me for money in a civil suit for having been raped? That's the big, that's going to be the big argument, that the only reason you're here is to extort money from me. And again, even if she was sexually assaulted, that was going to be, that's the best defense here.
And I agree with you 1,000%. I know very few, I don't know any well-balanced women who would come forward and claim they were raped when they weren't. But there's not a single man who is well-balanced who doesn't know what no means, regardless of when no happens. You're not entitled to it. Your responsibility is to be a man and back down, not take advantage of the fact that you're physically stronger and able to do what you want to do. And that's a message that needs to be passed on to boys growing up and the rest of the men in this country, to men who are their friends and others. It's just not acceptable on any level.
Totally agreed, and again, not to take responsibility away, but there are certain people that just have the sickness, and we have the Epsteins and the R. Kellys and people who had something happened in their background where it's compulsive behavior, and of course they know what they're doing is wrong, but they take it to a level that they're willing to be locked up forever just to continue doing it.
All right, when we come back, there's a number of other things to discuss with you. The NCAA may be finally getting theirs, as California says athletes are making zero money while schools make millions, and it's going to stop. The NRA's in the news. Todd Palin and Sarah Palin are getting divorced. Who gets Alaska? It's 6:46. All that with Karen Conti in a moment. Karen, just for fun, during the break, I sent you like 500 texts.
She'll never get
That's what friends are for. All right, so the NCAA has continually said, yeah, we know we're taking players to the cleaners. We know that the players make us millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Ooh, we don't care. We're going to fine them, maybe kick them off the team, kick them out of school, take away their scholarships, because there's always someone else in line to take that spot. So California has finally done something. A bill passed by the state assembly would allow college athletes to make endorsement deals. It's going to reach the desk of Governor Gavin Newsom, who's expected to sign it. My question is, the NCAA has jurisdiction over their schools and athletes when it comes to sports. Can California supersede that? And if California does, how can it not be done around the country?
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting thing, because the NCAA rules seem to conflict with what this bill says. This bill will allow athletes who play on college teams to get endorsements and the like. The NCAA rules, as I read them, say that the NCAA and the schools themselves have the ability to do endorsements, and you can't, as an individual, do those endorsements. So does that mean that those schools will not be part of the NCAA? I mean, I think there's like 20 schools in California that would be the Division I schools. So does that mean that NCAA kicks them out? Or does the NCAA now have to change its rules to accommodate? It's going to be very interesting.
I think what they've said, Karen, is that the NCAA would consider athletes who are being paid for their images, whatever, to be ineligible, and therefore could not compete, or they could, I guess, the results of any games in which they took part could be voided. So.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, from your standpoint, from a business standpoint, I mean, this is a huge business. NCAA, they make $1 billion a year, and the schools make about $9 billion a year. Are they going to take this risk, and are other states going to follow this lead here? And so are we going to then have these rules changed by necessity? I don't know what you think about it. I think that from a standpoint of, are these people really amateurs, or are they just making money for the school? And I think that we're going to see other legislatures do the same thing.
Definitely going to be a recruiting issue if all the states don't do it, wouldn't it, Dave? Because then, you know, if a kid has an opportunity to go make money somewhere and their family needs it, they're going to go to a school where they can make the money.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, if one state has right. a different set of laws mm-hmm. that would enable you to make more money, yeah. I would think that would be attractive to some.
So, and remember, this doesn't say that the schools can pay the athletes, just that they can do side deals.
Right.
Right.
And the problem is going to be that, you know, some of these schools cut deals with, say, a Nike or a company. So what happens when the individual wants to cut a deal with Adidas? That's going to impact the school's ability to cut the deal with the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a whole trickle-down effect of all kinds of things here.
So it seems to me that because this is an encouragement to strike outside deals, it's ripe for problems in that regard, too, because the agents and the endorsement folks don't have any incentive of playing by whatever the NCAA's rules are.
Right. I just think this is going to be the beginning of the end of amateurism in college sports.
You know, as much as I would say, you know, in an idealistic way, that's too bad. It's got
to
happen.
I think they deserve to get paid. They're making much money. And like, you hear these stories where the kids are like, don't have enough money for this or that, or, you know, even for food sometimes. Like, it's.
Well, the argument you always hear as a counter to that is they're getting free education. They're getting a scholarship, and their scholarship could amount to, depending on the school, as much as $250,000 or more.
However, that scholarship is what allows them to play on a team, and that team benefits mm-hmm. the school by millions and millions of dollars. So therefore, I don't think the two connect. I think you also need to make sure that these kids have enough to get by. And honestly,
I think they're moving in that direction, though. I mean, I think they have
which schools?
They have, and not schools necessarily, but conferences, and I do think they've tried to level things off a little bit and tried to come up with stipends and basically more money for the players. There was a time where, I mean, players got, they didn't get money to do their laundry. Mm-hmm. And I do think that some of that, there have been improvements. I think, you know, remember the lawsuit several years ago when some of the Northwestern players tried to unionize. Right. A lot of this came out at the time. And I think that led to some positive change. But, you know,
still a long way to go.
You have to remember, I mean, you know how they practice. Some of these athletes are engaged, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day in training and weight training and all of these other things. And it's hard to concentrate on your studies, such as they are, when you're doing that. And then what about the injury? That's another thing that I think it should, you know, should get some attention, because these kids, you know, may get injured the first day they're in school. And here they are injured for life, and they don't have any money to show for it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the studies, because we'll drop this here, but the studying part of this, the schools are responsible as well. And schools like the University of Kentucky that celebrates their one-and-done basketball team with a bunch of kids who are exceptional athletes who have no business being in college, who don't have the academic talent mm-hmm. to be in college, who are encouraged to come in, who have tutors and other people do their work for them. I'm not making this up. And the University of Kentucky just looks the other way. So the schools, not just the NCAA, mm-hmm. are part and parcel of the problem. So not all schools, just schools who are complicit in that way. All right, before we run out of time, Todd Palin and Sarah Palin are getting a divorce. Any marriage that ends after 31 years, well, it's too bad. It's sad. It's a long run. But people are going to move on and do what they're going to do. So what do we need to know about this story legally?
Well, I think everything gets split. They have $20 million somewhere in assets. They're going to split that up. My guess, and then there's still a child who's a minority. So she's, I think, 11 years old with Down syndrome. So there'll be custody and visitation and all that stuff. And then maintenance. You know, I think that she makes a lot of money giving speeches. He had a fishing operation and a couple other different side jobs. My guess is that she's going to be paying him maintenance based upon what she earns in her speaking engagements. So,
yeah, I mean, there's no question that the money she made came directly off her national celebrity, and she was good at it for a long time. So, yeah, I can't imagine a situation where he's not. He's going to get a new boat.
Yeah, and when you're married that long, it doesn't matter who makes the money. You're pretty much tied to that person the rest of your life when it comes to support. So I would imagine that her earning capacity is very, you know, way in excess of what his is, and she'll be paying a percentage to him for the rest of her life.
Karen Conti, Sunday nights, what time?
From 7 to 9.
And that's here on what station? 720 WGN, is that where you do that?
WGN.
All right. Thank you, Karen. I appreciate it as always. And when we come back, we'll get the news, and then John Williams will join us ahead of his induction, if you will, into the Walk of Fame. Dave will mock him because Dave's already on the Walk of Fame, and there's a whole hazing ritual.
I won't mock him.
Well, you say that now, but
we welcome him.
Don't think I don't know about the hazing. You and Orion and the rest of you do.
Well, it's a secret handshake.
Yeah, secret handshake.
It involves Mariah Corn.
It does involve Mariah Corn. That's exactly
Korn,
right.
And a crisp $5 bill.
Oh, boy.
I never learned that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so you say you'll be involved in the hazing as well. It's 7 o'clock. When we come back, we'll get that news in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. It's good to be
king. On Friday, just for a while, Mary Vandeveld and Dave Ennett and many other Walk of Fame members will welcome in the class of 2019. And when I say class, of course, I think of John Williams. Who's classier than John Williams, huh? Come on. See what I did there, John?
Stop.
What I did, John? Not my first day.
You don't mean that.
So
that's not the kind of introduction I would expect from you, Steve. What's the matter with you?
Well, I've lost my fastball. So how did you find out you got in?
Do you know?
I don't know.
The day that my retina was detached, I walked into my boss's office, Todd Banley, and I said, Todd, I'm going to have to miss a couple of days of work. My retina just fell off. And he said, oh, that's funny, because I just wanted to tell you you're being inducted into the next class. He says, I'm sorry, this isn't a more meaningful moment for you. I said, yeah, I appreciate that, but I got to run to the doctor right now.
So John realized he had a detached retina and was smart enough to get to the hospital before his vision was damaged in a way that couldn't be reversed. So did you have at any point time to celebrate that moment, or were you too worried about going blind at that point?
It was more like I didn't want to go blind. I finished my shift, and then I...
Right.
And then I hustled on over there, but... you know, Brenda said, oh, that's great. And the kids said, oh, that's great. And it is great. But it was just, you asked about the moment, and yeah. That was it. I thought, oh, shoot, I don't get a chance to savor this. So I will on Friday, Steve.
Well, yeah, I didn't know about the timing.
This just shows what an incredible professional Mr. Williams is, because he finished his shift even though he felt something was wrong
with
his eye.
Let me tell you something. If I knew my retina was detached,
you'd be gone.
All you see is the bottom of my feet.
We've never seen you move so fast.
Exactly.
You know, it was more a guy thing. I was like, oh, this will go away. So I was kind of blinking and, you know, going, oh, that massive shade of brown that's filled my field of vision. That'll go. I'm good. I'm good. I got this.
Idiot guys.
And then I realized I don't got this.
Mm. Idiot guys. All right. Now, you were an intern here. What years?
It would have been the summer of 19, like maybe 80.
Okay.
It was my junior year at college. And
did you intern for Bob Collins, or who did you intern for?
You know, back then they had a community affairs department. It was radio and TV out of Bradley Place, where Channel 9 still is. So I was an intern for both, but mostly my work was for radio. And so they just moved you around, and you did various things in community affairs. And one of them was traffic on Wally's show. So before we had what you guys have now, there was a little booth with a bunch of speakers, and you'd monitor state police, city police, county trucks, garbage trucks, whatever, anybody that had a walkie-talkie. And then they would talk about the traffic. You'd take notes, and then you would tell Flying Officer Jim Cavanaugh or Cook County Sheriff's Officer John Camden what the traffic was. So you were kind of the I was the internet for them back then.
I had no idea that's how traffic was done.
Literally,
it was
scanners,
eavesdropping on CBs.
No, scanners, yeah. Please, scanners.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we listened to the scanners. That's it, Mary. It was the scanners. We listened to all of that fancy talk.
Mary, what do we do now? Mary, how do we do it now? Is it a Ouija board?
Very computerized. Yeah. A lot of computers and sensors and all kinds of
things. So did you know at that point as a kid that you wanted to be a talk show host?
I did. And I knew I wanted to be at a WGN, you know. I mean, I was thinking about it. When did I decide this would be a fun thing to do? My dad was taking classes at Northern Illinois University when I was like in maybe freshman year in high school. And he had to drive from Joliet to Northern at night to take night classes. He said, does anybody want to go with me? Nobody wanted to go with him. But once in a while, you'd get corralled into going. And so I'd be sitting in the car, and he'd turn on the radio, and we would listen to talk shows. And I thought, these are kind of fun and interesting, and sometimes they were a little silly or zany. And I thought, man, that's a good job. Somebody calls in and goes, well, what do you think? And then your job is to tell them what you think. I thought that was a cool thing. And I didn't have any dots to connect at that point. But when you said, you know, when did you decide this is what you wanted to do? I would say it was in my dad's car driving up to DeKalb once a week.
Now, when you met Wally or Bob, I mean, there were legends, Roy walking the hallways. I mean, that had to be pretty intimidating.
Totally. I mean, I worked closely on their shows in a lot of capacities. I don't know that I ever, quote unquote, met them. They were on such a pedestal. I was just this little dweeb.
Another intern coming through here. He's never going to host his own show.
I know. The staff was very nice, and the hosts were too. I mean, Bob Collins was nice to everybody, right? And Roy had time for you, and Wally, all of them. But I put it this way: we didn't work as closely with the show hosts as interns do today. In part because they had their own secretaries, they had their own producers. They were over there, and you were kind of so far down the line that you didn't pal around with them or anything like that.
Sure.
Yeah, Steve tries to do that to us, actually.
Don't look me in the eyes when he says
pal around with you. Yeah, everybody looks at their watch when Steve walks in the room. Gotta go.
You know, the shows were done so differently back then. And yeah. John, I mean, you alluded to it, listening to the scanners, but on Bradley Place, and that the main studio, I guess it was Studio A, I don't remember what we called them back then, but you would walk in, Wally's studio had so many people involved in it. I mean, you had both Orion and Max were there. You had a record turner, a sound guy. You had
two engineers, two producers, two news engineers.
That would just play the sound effects. Like, you had a record guy, but then you had a sound effects guy.
Yes.
Wow.
And they actually, the way Wally did it, they were all busy. But I think the craziest thing, Dave, was the record turner thing, right? It was union. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to play a song, you couldn't pick up a record and drop a needle on it. I mean, forget about CDs or just playing it off the internet. There is a guy whose job it was to cue up a record. And when he'd say, now here's Neil Diamond, that guy would hit a button. That's what he did.
That's so cool.
It's the greatest scam in the history of broadcasting.
I know. It's either really cool or the greatest scam in the history of the United States. It was one or the other.
I'm a little jealous that you got a chance to see Wally pull off that circus act, because even though you didn't know how great it was, you and I both know from doing this, the idea that he was able to back time in his brain what was coming and how he would make all of that entertaining, including doing bits in and out of the commercials, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and it almost made you, it almost discouraged you, right, Steve? Because you're like, oh, crap, I can't do this.
Right.
You know, I would sit there with Marilyn, his producer, sometimes when I had free time, and just watch the show, and it was like a circus, but you didn't know how it was happening. And so the sound effect would come in, and Rosenthal would say something, and Wally would say something, and it was like seamless, perfect talk.
Right.
And I didn't know who knew when to go and how to do it. It was really an art, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it was like watching a ping pong match. I remember I filled in a couple times on his show, and I was scared to death. You know, when he kept putting all the carts in the machine, and you're like, wow, what's going on?
Well, that's the thing,
carts in the machine are little sound effects in like an 8-track tape player. And Wally would say something, and then a voice would come on and go, what? Or, oh, Wally, you da-da-da-da-da. All those little drops he had. And I've been told that they were scripted out, and maybe some of it was. I think he wrote into the commercials. I think he knew how to get into the spots, but a lot of that was just ad lib. I mean, we know some of his engineers. Mike Novak, for instance, was one of them on occasion, and he would just drop stuff in on Wally, but nobody missed a beat.
Yeah, and you know, I've often thought about this with my ADD. I would have quit the first day, you know, because about 6:15 on the first show, I would have went, I can't keep up with this.
I think that's what it's like in your head, Steve. I think it's a bunch of voices and sounds firing off.
That's very true. No, it's very true.
None of them on the air, though. That's sad.
All right. So I don't know how Friday's going to work. I do know the Bill and Wendy Experience is where this will take place right after this show. There are tape tributes to all of you. Not that you've died, but are you going to give an opportunity to make any remarks? What do we know about that?
Yeah, I thought I was going to give a speech, so I've been fretting over that. You know, like, and now here's John, and then I give my little talk. But it's more like Bill and Wendy are hosting the show, so then when it's my turn to be inducted, if you will, then they'll introduce me and kind of interview me. We'll just have a little conversation.
Didn't I do that to you, Dave, when I hosted it?
You talked to me.
Yeah, didn't I grill you?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, and it was about 95 degrees, and
there was a swinging light bulb over your head. Yeah. And I said, "Where were you when this happened?"
No, it was great. It was great, and it's a special day. It really is, and I think John, you will savor every minute of it.
John,
I think I will, Dave.
Don't forget to thank your wife. That's the main important thing.
That was going to be the first thing in my speech. I was going to say, every time one of us gets a pat on the back, it's not because somebody with us didn't either acquiesce or help out in some way that you don't know. I really do think Brenda and I get this award. By the way, did you guys know it's at the Chicago Architecture Center this year? It's not outside
the
sun. The
first time it's inside. We froze last year.
Well, it's either too hot or too cold, depending on the year.
As a result, it's not open to the public. So if you were thinking, oh, I'll just come up and see Dave and Steve and the whole gang, you can't. It's a ticketed event, and it's in that little auditorium they have at the Architecture Center, which is a lovely place, but I'd hate to see people drive in from Connecticut for this, and they can't get to it.
Well, I'd like to see him standing outside waiting to greet you, King. anyway,
it's going to be a live on the radio. So
it will be.
Well.
Yeah, and it's a great honor, and I'm glad you got it. It's well deserved.
It's good company to keep. You guys, you're a room full of honorees there, Steve Cochran.
Well, Dave.
Except for you, but I mean, that's going to happen any day.
Dave's in.
Mary's in.
Yeah, Grzanich went in just 5 minutes ago. I don't know what's happening here. He just got in.
Although I'm cleaning the place. I'm not really.
And we have Orion, too.
And Orion, yeah. Mary, Orion, and Dave. There you go. Well, congrats, my friend. And you'll be on the radio today?
Affirmative. We will be on from 1 to 3, Saturday, 10 to noon.
All right. Thanks, man. That's John Williams. Finally reaching his kingly status.
People, here's the thing. Can I have your attention, please, people?
Most famous.
Amazing. Just great.
So great.
Awesome.
You rock my world.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet.
The MVPP today. Megan Morgan, Executive Director of Girls in the Game. And we go to Megan now. First off, congratulations on your honor. Good morning, Megan.
Thank you. Good morning.
What is Girls in the Game?
So we're a nonprofit organization. We provide sports, health, and leadership programming to girls 7 through 18. We have year-round programs that run across the city of Chicago, although mostly on the south and west sides.
This is, as you said, a year-round program, but the long-term goal is not just self-esteem and physical health. It's to change the world.
Exactly. I mean, we want, you know, to show every girl that she can grow into a strong, confident leader who has the ability to, you know, affect change, not just in herself, but in the community around her.
What's your theory on where a lack of self-esteem that's been studied again and again in young girls comes from and how we change it? In other words, is the physical aspect of it more important than what goes on in the heart and the head, or is it too hard to tell?
You know, I think it's a combination, and all the research will tell you that it's that middle school age that girls' confidence really drops. So,
the mean girls' time?
Exactly. And, you know, it's when girls are dealing with, you know, their bodies are changing. And it's, you know, middle school's not a fun time for anybody. And for girls, if they don't have that safe space where they can, you know, try new things and, you know, feel supported by their coaches and their teammates, they're not going to have the ability to overcome those challenges that are facing them.
How important is it to make this an all-girls thing?
It's extremely important. I mean, you know, having that safe all-girls space is really at the heart of what we do. One of the things we're really proud of is that we attract girls to our program, you know, not just the girls that would naturally be going out for the basketball team, but the girls that would probably be self-conscious to try sports in a co-ed environment. You know, when you have a co-ed sports program, you're always going to have those couple girls that are happy to jump in with the boys, but you're going to have a lot more girls that stand on the sidelines and watch. And in our programs, you know, the girls can feel safe to jump in, and we do all kinds of sports. So we do sports like basketball and volleyball and soccer, but we also do things like lacrosse and tennis and yoga so that, you know, no girl's always going to be the star and no girl's always going to be the bench warmer.
Megan, why was this a personal passion for you? Growing up, did you play a lot of sports or a lot of outdoor activities, and did it affect your life in a positive way?
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate. I grew up in the suburbs, and I had the opportunity to play any sport I wanted. It was never a matter of, was I going to play sports? It was, what sport am I going to play in that season? And so it was really, you know, kind of shocking for me when I learned about Girls in the Game and learned that that's not true of all girls. You know, the disparity between access to sports between girls from, like, middle class and high class backgrounds to girls of color from low socioeconomic girls of color from low socioeconomic backgrounds is really glaring. I mean, they have the least access to sports.
Another piece of this is healthy choices, and there used to be a program called DARE. And DARE was when you would take fifth graders aside because it was deemed to be an important age of decision-making and make healthy choices about not doing drugs. I liked the DARE program very much. Eventually, it got kind of poo-pooed out of business. But the healthy choices, I assume, involve things like drugs and alcohol?
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the great things about our program is it's not just sports. We never do a sports program without very intentionally including that health and leadership component. And with health, it is things like drugs and alcohol. It's not just, you know, nutrition and smart eating. It is, you know, healthy relationships, bullying, making healthy choices. So when you're in a tough situation and all your friends are doing one thing, how do you do the right thing? And where do you turn to for help in those situations?
Well, it's great to talk to you and get back to work, Megan Morgan. You are the most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you very much. I'm honored.
I appreciate you being on. We're going to come back with your news next on 720 WGN.
And in New York, the 9/11 memorials are beginning at Ground Zero. The national anthem being sung. We heard the bagpipes arriving there a little while ago. It's 7:46, just about 2 minutes from right now. We'll mark the anniversary, the 18th anniversary of the first jetliner to hit the World Trade Center in New York, American Airlines Flight 11. Stay with us throughout the morning. We'll have live coverage of the president at about 8:45, 8:46 this morning, right here on 720 WGN.
And we will take that moment of silence live in a moment, and I also have a bit of a look back at 9/11 through statistics and stories, and some of them you've forgotten, some of them you may never have known, including untold heroes who saved so many people on that day. It's easy to remember where you were if you were of an age to be an adult at that point, but even kids who are now adults with kids of their own, I'm sure remember where they were, and depending on your age and what school you were in, your reaction of your teachers and principals and things of that nature. All right, let's all pause for a moment and remember those who passed on 9/11 and your own personal reflections for the next few seconds. And as 9/11 commemoration ceremonies are underway in New York, there is the annual reading of names. It was a clear day, beautiful clear day in New York, in Chicago, and so many other places, when Spike Odell sat at this microphone about 20 or 30 minutes before and said, "Oh, what a slow news day." The world changed just a few minutes later. And by the way, he wasn't wrong when he said that. But no one knew what would be coming. As an evacuation of the first tower got underway, the plane that had been loaded with 20,000 gallons of jet fuel. If you're listening to...
This is from New York, Ground Zero.
Ground Zero and the bagpipes that Steve mentioned. We've got multiple monitors going here.
Yeah, and simultaneously to this, at the White House, the president has now emerged from the White House with Melania Trump, First Lady. They're walking down to the center of the South Lawn, where there will be a similar moment of silence.
18 minutes after the first plane hit, a second Boeing 767, United Flight 175, turned sharply right and sliced into the second tower near the 60th floor. Caused a massive explosion, and eventually Tower 2 would fall. The 19 terrorists that we would eventually identify smuggled box cutters and knives through security. You wonder why you still have to take your shoes off at the airport. It's not just the shoe bomber. It was a different world then, a world where you could still greet your loved ones at the gate. You could still walk pretty much wherever you wanted. And, well, airport security, they were diligent. It was nothing like it is today. Nor was the equipment that could scan your luggage and your bags and things of that nature. As millions watched the events unfolding in New York, American Airlines Flight 77 circled over downtown Washington, D.C. before crashing into the west side of the Pentagon at 8:45 Chicago time. Jet fuel from the Boeing 757 caused a devastating fire, led to the structural collapse of a portion of the giant concrete
Gordon
building.
M. Ahmad Jr.
As the reading of names begins.
Marie Rose
125 Ahmad. Military personnel and civilians are killed in the Pentagon. 64 on the plane itself. And less than 15 minutes after the terrorist struck the Pentagon, the horror in New York got even worse when a building that was constructed to be able to withstand winds of 200 miles an hour in a large conventional fire would collapse because of the incredible heat generated by the burning jet fuel. There were only 6 people in the World Trade Center towers at the time of the collapse that survived. Did you even know there were 6? Statistically, I didn't even know that number existed.
No, I didn't.
10,000 others were treated for injuries, many severe. And meanwhile, a fourth California-bound plane, United Flight 93, was hijacked about 40 minutes after leaving
Newark Liberty International Airport. That plane had been delayed in taking off. So the key there was that the people on that plane had found out what was going on. They knew they were hostages, and they knew they were headed for their end. One of the passengers, a guy named Thomas Burnett Jr., told his wife over the phone, "I know we're all going to die. There's three of us who are going to do something about it. I love you, honey, but I've got to go." There was a an operator who also overheard Todd Beamer saying, "Are you guys ready? Let's roll." Sandy Bradshaw, a flight attendant, called her husband and explained that she had slipped into a galley and was filling pitchers with boiling water. Her last words to him were, "Everyone's running to first class. I've got to go. Goodbye." If you make your way to New York and you go to the 9/11 memorial, they warn you about a secondary section of the memorial, which is gut-wrenching and heartbreaking. But in that second section that you can enter, you hear these phone calls. These phone calls are recorded. Families release the rights to allow them to be played, just to make sure the impact is known and their family members are honored. But that was the difference, because we had things called air phones, F-O-N-E, that you could slide a credit card and make a phone call with. You weren't using cell phones on the plane. And that's how so many people were able to call. You know, we never talked about this back then, but it always broke my heart, too, to think about people who were at work.
Yeah.
Or weren't home. And they missed the call. They had to come home to find a message. They weren't there when that last call came in.
Or could you imagine not taking the call?
Yeah,
letting it go to voicemail. Steve, there's another fact that it's important to know. Of all the people that were killed at the World Trade Center, only 60% of them have been identified.
I didn't know that.
The remains. So as of July of this year, just about 60% of the remains, 60% of the 2,753 people killed have been positively identified. And just earlier in the month, back in August, actually, late August, a firefighter who died, his remains were just identified, and his funeral was just held yesterday.
Nearly 18 years later. Citizens of 78 countries died in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania that day. 2,763 died in all, 343 firefighters and paramedics, 23 New York City police officers, 37 Port Authority police officers. Those first responders were trying to evacuate the buildings because they run in when the rest of us run out. At the Pentagon, 189 killed, 64 on Flight 77. And on Flight 93, 44 died at that crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Experts indicate that when Flight 93 went down, it had been overtaken after a fight in the cockpit with Todd Beamer and the other men who were brave enough to challenge him, and either died on that point on the attack, or the terrorists decided to crash the plane right then and there. No one will ever know. We'll never have complete answers on Flight 93, but we know those heroes prevented Flight 93 from finishing its mission, which was believed to be to crash into the White House, if not the White House, the Capitol. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is still at Guantanamo and will finally go on trial in 2021, is believed to have told authorities the Capitol was easier to find, so they wanted to hit the Capitol. Bin Laden wanted them to hit the White House. There were also nuclear plants up and down the East Coast, which were a possibility. But that flight was stopped because of those heroes. I mean, the economic impact is unbelievable, as you would guess. It cost $60 billion in World Trade Center damage. The cost of the cleanup at Ground Zero was $750 million, but the cost of the cleanup was way worse than that because so many people died from exposure to that toxic smoke and fumes. And it wasn't until John Stewart and other 9/11 first responders, including John Feel, a retired New York City Police Department detective, and Luis Alvarez the same. By the way, Alvarez died of cancer 18 days after testifying to Congress this year. And a tremendous amount of public pressure helped created by those guys forced the president and others to sign in Congress to push through this compensation fund, which now exists through 2092.
And Steve, not just the first responders either. There's a story this morning from ABC News about, remember the school, there's a school close to 9/11.
Yep, right.
And these were little kids, first and second, I believe, first and second graders, now 18, 19, 20. They're now having respiratory illnesses that have been confirmed by the World Trade Center organization that handles all of these health claims to be tied to 9/11. So even after all these years, those little kids who were near 9/11, near Ground Zero, are having respiratory problems.
They're saying 10,000 people were diagnosed with 9/11 related cancer of every age. 10,000. As I said, the Flight 93 mysteries will never fully be told, but if you make your way to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, there's an amazing memorial there, which includes wind chimes, separate toned wind chimes for all of those that died. It is, as one person said, holy ground, and it'll remind you of all the good that those people's lives represented and that we represent and all the bad that happened on that day. Marianne Brett of nearby Johnstown, Pennsylvania, said, it gives me goosebumps every time. He said, but this is peaceful. You cannot be divided when you're here. And there's an exhibit inside the visitor center which relates the story of Flight 93. The ultimate sacrifice made on that day by those men and those women on that plane is the reason it wasn't even worse than the horrible thing that it actually was and the thing that we witnessed and remember today. But there are some real-life heroes whose names need to be mentioned again, and we will get to those as soon as possible as well. And the president is scheduled to make some remarks in a little less than an hour, depending on timing, but we anticipate hearing that as well.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
There's some names. Some of these names you'll know, some you won't, some you may never have heard of at all. But when the 9/11 attacks did what they did, these are people that need to be remembered as well. American Airlines Flight 11 attendants Betty Ong and Madeline Amy Sweeney helped identify the attackers. I don't know if you remember this, but it was fairly quickly that we had our own Pentagon experts and in anti-terrorism experts of that day say, we believe this is Osama bin Laden. And I don't know about you, Dave, but my recollection of that was, well, how would they know this quickly? Part of the reason they were able to do the identification that fast and tie it back to bin Laden was because of Betty Ong and Madeline Amy Sweeney, mm-hmm. who were on the phone with the airline saying what happened after they were hijacked. And they stayed on the phone talking about where these passengers were seated, describing the manifest, they described the use of mace-like gas and what had happened so far. They didn't know they were going to die, but they stayed on the calls almost until the moment the plane was deliberately flown into the North Tower at 7:45 our time. Brian Clark is a man who should be remembered as a hero. Brian Clark rescued a man named Stanley Pranemuth, who was on the 81st floor of the South Tower when the second plane hit. When that second plane hit, It's incredible that anybody survived, but Stanley Pranemuth did survive. However, everything was on fire. He didn't know which way was out, and he thought he was going to die. Brian Clark also worked in the tower, had heard his cries for help, and with his encouragement, he convinced Stanley Pranemuth to jump past burning debris blocking his way. And Pranemuth to this day says he saved his life. Michael Benfante and John Sequeira carried a wheelchair-bound woman to safety. You think about the fact you got to walk down 68 floors of the World Trade Center towers, and you're in a wheelchair? I mean, what could be more frightening than that? Because you can't get there. The woman's name was Tina Hansen, and from floor 68 all the way down, Michael and John carried her in her wheelchair to help her survive. Patricia Arojo set up a triage area after the Pentagon attacks. She served in the military and as a nurse. And thanks to the efforts of her as an Army nurse and others, they were able to treat the wounded that survived at the Pentagon. Frank DeMartini and Pablo Ortiz saved at least 50 lives in the North Tower. Frank, a construction worker who worked for the Port Authority. Pablo Ortiz, a Port Authority construction instructor, were inside the tower when it was hit. They survived, but instead of seeking safety, they began to help people trapped in the 80th and 89th floors, along with their coworkers. The two are thought to have saved at least 50 lives by opening stuck elevator doors, clearing offices, directing people to exit through the dust, through the flames, through the obstructions. They were likely trying to come to the aid of more when the North Tower collapsed and killed them. Flight 93 passengers, as I mentioned, Todd Beamer, Tom Burnett. There was also
Jeremy Glick and Mark Bingham were the four men that did what they had to do on Flight 93 before that plane would crash and kill everyone aboard in Shanksville. And I mean, there's just so many others. Sister Cynthia Mahoney provided counseling and blessed remains at Ground Zero. She went there every day for 6 months, 7 days a week for 6 months.
One of my favorite stories, and again, there's all kinds of human stories, but there's a cool animal story as well. There was a blind man who was working on the 78th floor of the towers, and his guide dog, Rosella, guided him all the way down safely out of the building.
It's a great story.
And that dog died a number of years ago, but a heroic dog, one of the heroic dogs of 9/11.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
it is 8:13, and Dean Richards joins us now. It's more on entertainment. Good morning, Dean. That's great. Me too.
No, it's right here.
Oh, here it is.
I'm right here. I forgot to turn the microphone on.
You know, that'll happen.
You know, we have new... remember the other day it was shorting out, and I was almost electrocuted. I was almost killed.
Sure. You're lucky to be alive every day on the show.
In a freak accident, I was almost killed. They replaced everything that was shorting out. And now it's all just, you know, it's like upset my routine.
Did they huff and puff and talk about how difficult it was to get it done?
No. Very, very helpful, very cooperative.
Because, you know, that's a standard engineering move at times.
Sometimes it is, but not with our WGN engineers.
What do you mean you need a pen?
No. You ask an engineer if you need a pen?
We can't get that done.
Somebody get an electrical engineer. I need a pen.
Actually, that's not a bad idea. I'd like to see the look on their face if I ask them for a pen.
Do you remember the engineer that we had? He was named Ron Cohn.
Sure, of course.
And
the late great.
He always had at least 50 pens in his pocket.
He literally had a shirt pocket pen protector situation.
Right? Seriously?
Yeah, and
seriously.
He had an entire Staples.
Yep.
Office Depot, Office Max.
In his pocket.
He had a pocket protector, yeah. Yeah. And he always had a short sleeve white shirt.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very well dressed every day.
Yep. Very, very nice.
So he looked like the guy, the IT guy on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Anything you needed, you called Ron and he would have it for you within 5 minutes.
Now he did. You occasionally did have to put up with a joke.
He would tell you a joke. That's true.
I'm guessing it wasn't. Aww. He wasn't a great joke teller.
Not so much, but he was a very sweet man.
He was adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, Ron.
Sometimes we heard it more than once, but right. That was okay.
Right.
Because we laughed again.
Very nice man. He started here in 1811.
Right. Wow. Radio wasn't even invented yet.
No. But
we hear from him once in a while too.
Ron Coney's gone.
What?
Ron's dead, isn't he?
I'm not sure.
This is awkward.
I may have the just way
stepped
you were, in it.
Because the way you were talking about him, it sounded like he was gone.
I thought he passed.
Yeah, I think he might be. Well, no, I don't know.
Okay, well, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. And I hope it's you that's right.
I do, too.
I know
Bob Bros is still with us. He's another legend.
Yes, we've had many
legendary engineers.
Right, and some not so much.
Okay. Did I ever tell you about the engineer? I won't mention his name. But he threatened to kill me like my first night.
What? Oh, what happened?
He wanted to strangle me.
Yeah, but why?
He did not like... this will give you an idea of how long ago the young bloods were coming into WGN.
Wow.
That I'd come from, you know, other radio stations.
Sure, who are you to come in here?
I wasn't deserving to be on WGN,
right.
Which maybe he may have been 100% correct, but he did threaten to kill me.
And you say, well, thank you for the welcome.
Very nice to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, did he threaten you via body language or did he say something?
No, he said something and body language. He was a very big, very, very big man, very imposing and scary.
Wow. Kudos to you for getting through the show.
Let me tell you something.
Oh, I know who it was.
You can handle yourself.
Dave probably remembers him.
You can handle yourself. By the way, was that guy removed immediately?
No, not at all.
No, because those were different times. He has a nice pension.
Those were different times.
Yeah.
All right. So 9/11 on the radio that morning. At that point, I was doing a midday show here. It was shortly after I started at GM. And I had this weird shift that would start at like 12:35 after the noon show.
12:35
and go to 3.
Right? Yeah, that was a weird. It was like a weird schedule you had.
Yeah, and there were times when the Cubs would play a 1:20 game where I would literally be on the air for 7 or 8 minutes.
And then he's not kidding.
The pregame. Not kidding.
Didn't you follow Paul Harvey?
I did.
Yeah.
They needed a closer.
You just had to make sure those 7 minutes counted when you knew there was a game?
Oh, I gave them the best 7 minutes of their lives. But here's the thing. On that day, after the second plane hits, you know it's for real. I remember the Pentagon being hit, and I thought, I got to get the kids from school. My kids were 13 and mm-hmm. 9 at that point. And all the fear that goes with it. Once you realize that we're not immediately in trouble, obviously there was grave concerns about Chicago, and if big buildings were being attacked, the Tribune Tower.
People are saying that. I remember being in the building when they were saying we all should leave the building.
Yeah.
The Tribune Tower might also be one of the targets.
Yeah. Well, it was shortly after that when security folks came through. Where one of them told me that the Tribune Tower, after the then-named Sears Tower, was the second most likely attack point in Chicago because it was a major worldwide media company, and that would, again, be a message that terrorists would like to send if, in fact, there was an attack. But when all air traffic was shut down, I remember coming in on the Stevenson from the western suburbs, and there's a point prior to Midway where you're coming into the city on the Stevenson, and you kind of go up and over this little hill, a hill by Illinois standards, and the beautiful Chicago skyline comes into view. And to see the Sears Tower, the first thing you see after what you've seen on TV and you know what's going on in New York with nothing in the sky, all you could picture was a plane flying into that tower.
Yep.
And then it would be, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before we heard a plane in the sky? You remember the first time you heard a plane?
Yeah, it was eerily quiet. Remember? Eerily quiet.
Amazing.
But I remember coming in that morning. I used to come into the office around 7 o'clock in the morning. And I would get there, and we all have TVs in the office. We put them on just so we can see if there's any breaking news, ironically, or anything going on that day. And I'm listening to Spike Odell, who was mm-hmm. on in the morning then, with Tom Peterson, and they were watching the same thing I was, and it just looked like a private plane had crashed into the World Trade Center.
Yeah, like a horrible accident.
Yeah, and Spike and Tom on the air were talking about what's going on. It's like some, and I was on the phone with a friend of mine, and I said, some idiot just crashed a private plane into the World Trade Center, and then the second plane hit. And everybody realized that this was, that life was about to change we knew it.
Do you guys remember what the big story was that morning before the planes hit?
No, I don't.
It was Michael Jordan about to return to the NBA with the Washington Wizards.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That was the day there was going to be an announcement, but never got announced because they put it off for a couple of weeks, obviously, with the events of the day.
Right. I remember we went to network program. We were almost solid network programming, which never happens on WGN ever.
Yeah, I was the first guy back on the air.
It was a very long time.
Maybe 1:30, quarter to 2, something like that, where we broke away from ABC.
Solid network programming covering it. And I remember just being in the office, as I'm sure a lot of people were in their workplaces, walking around in a daze, not knowing what do we do? What happens next? It was very bizarre. Very bizarre.
David's on line one. Let me grab this. David, you worked TV back then?
I worked TV back then. I worked for a TV news network, which I can't say. But I got a call that morning after everything went down in our job. When, as you were talking about driving into the city, we were on the other end of it. We had to rent a boat, and we went out onto Lake Michigan and spent the entirety of the day with cameras pointed at the city just in case.
Wow. What a horrible gig. I mean, what a horrible assignment at that point.
It was horrible, and it was also oddly peaceful because as you were sitting and looking at the city, I've never seen Chicago so quiet. And to your point earlier, Steve, there was no plane. So thank God nothing happened, but just the anxiety and the attention of sitting out there and just floating around, God forbid, waiting for something to happen. Thank God it didn't, but it was...
That's
one of those memories that rings forever.
No question. Thank you, David. I appreciate it and appreciate you listening as well.
My other vivid 9/11 memory was actually 6 months after 9/11. I happened to be in New York doing other things and really was sort of oblivious to the anniversary date. But it was the first time that they lit up those blue lights in lower Manhattan. I just happened to be down there. I saw a crowd of people. What's going on? I went over and looked, and it was a crowd of survivors. And, boy, it just hit me like a ton of bricks suddenly as I'm standing and talking with people who are holding, remember all the images of people holding pictures of their loved ones who are still missing?
Yep.
They were still holding pictures of their loved ones who had not been identified yet. And they lit up these two blue towers for the first time, Rudy Giuliani and the mayor of the governor of New York at the time. I don't remember who was governor at the time, but
Pataki.
I think it was. They were there. They flipped the switch and turned the beams on. And I remember spending the rest of the evening there just, you know, talking with people who were telling me stories about their loved ones and what they did in the World Trade Center and who they were and, you know, what it was like. And, you know, it becomes a significantly different story than hearing it on the radio or seeing it on TV.
I hope you'll have an opportunity at some point, if you have not yet, to get to New York City and go to the memorial. It is not an easy time, but it's something everybody should do, and it will remind you of when we all got along and we all rode the boat in the same direction.
Yeah, remember that.
More of that.
Remember that. There's a new HBO documentary that's premiering tonight at 8 o'clock Chicago time called In the Shadows of the Tower. It's the story of eight high school students who went to Stuyvesant High School, just a few blocks away from the World Trade Center, when all of this happened. And it's this story from their perspective of being young kids in school and, you know, trying to negotiate this and deal with this and how it's changed their lives. It's a very moving documentary.
Sounds like it.
On tonight.
All right, we're back with more of Dean in a second.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard.
All right, back to Dean. Super short on time, unfortunately. But let me just ask you a couple quick entertainment stories, if you don't mind.
Yep.
The Wrigley Field concerts of 2020 have been announced, or at least the first one.
Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy are all going to be performing together. It's going to be August the 12th at Wrigley Field. And tickets are going to go on sale this coming a week from Friday, September 20th.
And that's the only one we know so far.
That's the only one that's been. It's an early announcement.
Is it?
When they announce, you know, before the actual year in which it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's that very early announcement.
And do we know who's going to do the Super Bowl halftime show for sure?
Looks like it's going to be Jennifer Lopez. She's in talks right now. Nobody is confirming it for sure, but that's what all the talk is right now.
I don't know.
Not happy with that?
She's great. She's beautiful. She's very talented. She can't sing. So, and since it's a music show for 15 minutes, I think that's an issue.
Okay.
So, it's good news for Madonna.
She speaks highly of you, too.
Do you think it's a good idea?
I think it's okay. Yeah. There's going to be so much flash and dancing and so much other than just singing going on.
Well, that's probably the problem. I know she's going to ask me to be one of her background dancers, and I don't know if I feel
like
it's going
to be awkward now.
Well, I remember when she did the Motown tribute at the Grammy Awards, she got some detractors as well.
Well, yeah. Some people said that it shouldn't have been. It should have been someone who was an African-American person doing it. But I thought her performance was fine. I enjoyed it. Who would be better, Steve?
Can I get back to you on that?
I know you're a big,
I just want to be one of those people who bitch about something but have no answers.
I know you're a big fan of banjo music. Maybe that would be a good halftime.
That would be tremendous.
Anything with banjo would be good.
I love the banjo.
It would be fantastic.
All right. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
See you tomorrow.
That's Dean. And we are going to come back with your headlines next on 720 WGN. It is 8:42. Stan Bowman, the boss, the GM of your Chicago Blackhawks. This Sunday, I will be with Dean Richards at Training Fest, and then there's a game afterwards. And Stan, it's almost hockey season.
We're there, Steve. We're almost there. It's pretty exciting to finally have the guys back.
Did you want to tell Dave you traded him just before this phone call?
No, actually, he's been coming along good. I think.
Oh, no. Stan.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate that.
Good, good, good. What is it? You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You've had a number of very busy months here.
You've made some amazing deals, and you know the old cliche, if the game was played on paper, they'd already be giving us the cup. Having said that, it's not played on paper, it's played on ice, and we still got to play the games. But what's tougher, the deals you make or the deals you don't make that we never know about?
Oh, that's a great question, Steve. It's hard making trades for players you've had in your system for a while and guys you've spent a lot of time getting to know. So that's never an easy part of the game. But at the same time, when you're trying to improve your team, you know, you have to give to get. And I think looking back at the trades we made, we identified some issues with our team from last year, and we set out to try to fix those and bring in some players that could, you know, improve those weaknesses from last year. We did some good things last year, for sure. You know, we made a good push toward the end there.
Right.
So there was some positives that came out of the year, but there was some areas that we felt that we had to shore up. And you know, I think we were able to accomplish a lot of that with the moves that we made. And, you know, as we sit here today getting ready for camp to start, I like the look of this team. And you're right, it's going to take some time for the guys to get acclimated and become a team. Doesn't happen overnight, but we got to get started.
Stan, being better in the faceoff circle, one of the areas in which you figure to be significantly improved this year based on the moves you've made?
Yeah, that's a good point. A couple points about that. We didn't really have a lot of strength with right-handed centermen. And although it doesn't sound like a big deal, there's not as many of those in the league as there are lefties. So, you know, position of the faceoff is something that's important because there's a new rule this year that didn't get a lot of attention. But when there's a power play or when there's an icing, the offensive team can choose which side of the ice the faceoff can go on. So if you have the ability to use a right-handed or a left-handed center. We've got Ryan Carpenter and Andrew Shaw, so we've got a couple options as righties. We didn't have that last year, and it's a small point, but it's something that when the game is on the line, you have the option to use someone who's strong on one area or one side of the ice, then that could help us.
You know, as we get ready for a new season, there are some new faces, but the old guys, you know, the really old guys, the Taves and Kane, the graying parts of the Blackhawks. I mean, we can't not have great years from those guys that have given us so much so far. I mean, how are they feeling?
They're feeling good. It's funny to call 30- and 31-year-old guys old.
right.
I guess that's where we're at. But no, I mean, Jonathan and Patrick had their best year of their career last year, offensively anyway, and that's pretty unique to be doing that when you get into your 30s. But I think, if anything, that shows that there's a lot of hockey left for both players. It was nice to see them have such good seasons and to be the offensive catalyst for our team. And I expect that to be the case this year as well. You know, so although they might be in their 30s now, I think there's still a lot of great hockey left in them.
Stan, what did you learn about some of your young guys at this prospect tournament over in Michigan this past week?
Well, you try not to make too many big declarations because it is a couple games and they didn't really get a chance to practice or ramp it up. But I think we saw some, you know, the top talent, high-pick players were noticeably good. You know, Kirby Dach, he got injured last game, but, you know, he scored a goal before that. He scored a goal his first game. And Adam Boquist, who was our first rounder the year before, he scored the overtime winner in game one against Detroit. So, you know, they're big-time players that can make those big plays, and that's what we had hoped to see, and we did see it. And then some of the other guys who are probably not as well-known, but played different role. They're maybe not going to lead the team in scoring, but I thought they showed well their competitiveness. You know, we had a heartbreaking loss Monday, and then they came right back yesterday and they had a 6-1 victory. So they responded well to that tough defeat on Monday, and I think you're looking for things like that more so than making a lot of conclusions about players, but you like to see the competitiveness and the way that they ended on a strong note.
I saw you signed Brendan Perlini. Is that kind of last piece of unfinished business for this offseason?
No, he's not done.
Well, I'm asking him.
Oh, no, he's not done.
No, well, I think you're right this time, though. We are, we've got our team set as far
I'm
as...
I'm not buying it.
All right, you can hold your breath. But we don't know exactly which players are going to be, you know, starting the season for us. We have a good idea of a number of them, but, you know, there's a group of guys that are all in the same boat. You know, they're fighting for a few spots, and we're going to see how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. But it was good to get Brendan signed. And, you know, there's no lingering players waiting to be added as we get camp going. So everyone's going to be ready to roll, and we'll see how it plays out.
It's going to be a fun year, Stan. I got a very good feeling about this one, and people will go, Steve, you say it every year. Yeah, but I got a better feeling this year.
I like it.
Training Camp Festival coming up this weekend. The Free Outdoor Street Festival opens at 8 a.m. Blackhawks alumni, live music, entertainment for all ages. And the first 10,000 fans to enter the building for the game get a Patrick Kane bobblehead inspired by the 10th anniversary of the 2010 Stanley Cup champs.
Can't believe it's 10 years.
Yep. You are getting old, Dave. Tickets can be purchased at Blackhawks.com. I mean, they're $5. You know, $5. I'll give you $5 if you don't have $5 for this, because it's worth it. And Dean's doing a show out there, and I'll be on with Dean. So Stan's excited about that.
No, that's great. It's a great event for our fans. It's something that we've done for several years now, and it's kind of a nice way to kick off our training camp. And I know our players enjoy, especially players who've come from other organizations. They can't believe that we have a full house for an opening scrimmage, and it's kind of their introduction to the Chicago fans, and they see everybody come out to support our team. And you know, normally it would be sort of a mundane day where there's a scrimmage in a squad and there's nobody watching, and now we're going to have sold out United Center, so it's pretty fun. I encourage people to come down and watch.
Appreciate the time. I'll see you Sunday.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks,
Stan Bowman, the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks. Let me go to Steve in the newsroom. I know we're standing by for words from President Trump in Washington on this 9/11. Do I have time to take a break here, do you think? What's your gut feel?
My gut feeling is yes, you do. They've just said a prayer. They've had the national anthem, the president is on stage, but the joint chief's chairman is getting ready to speak right now, so you may have like a minute or two to go to a break.
We'll come back when the president speaks. Now this, 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
We're standing by for President Trump to speak. This is at, or outside, I should say, the Pentagon, Steve. Is that right?
Yes, it's just outside of the part of the Pentagon where a plane flew into the building 18 years ago at 8:37 Central Time, so just about 10 minutes or so ago in history. The Secretary of Defense is speaking right now, Mark Esper. We believe he is going to introduce the president, so we may be another minute or so away.
What do you remember about, were you on BBM that day?
I was. My first assignment of the day was to go to the Sears Tower just shortly after the attacks happened, and I remember trying to get to the Sears Tower through a giant crowd of people coming at me away from the buildings. Sure. They were coming down every street, just in the middle of the street, headed toward Lakeshore Drive and headed toward State Street, Michigan Avenue, trying to get away from the Sears Tower. And I just remember trying to get there as fast as I could and not being able to. I remember getting to a certain point, the police were like, you can't go any further. And that's where I just stopped and talked to people who were out of breath. They had to come down many of them had to come down stairs. They weren't even allowed to take the elevators down the Sears Tower.
So they shut the elevators down.
They did. They were letting some people with disabilities come down that day, but it was people were crying. They couldn't reach their families. People who did have cell phones with them, they were busy. They were tied up. They couldn't get lines out. Long distance lines were full, and I just remember people just being in tears, just weeping and asking me for information because I was the reporter. They wanted to know exactly what was going on. Never forget that day.
It's remarkable that we haven't had an attack here, that we haven't had anything close to what happened on 9/11 again, but that's part of the incredible military and intelligence agencies that we have that should be lauded and thanked.
every day because those institutions thrive and survive because they're great at what they do, and they've kept us safe since then. We're not immune from it. Obviously, our innocence went away that day, but we're still here because they're still there. We're standing by again for President Trump. Mary, is the introduction coming?
Yeah, I think it's we're getting pretty close.
I want to ask Mary Vandeveld what she remembers about the day, but I don't want you to start talking to me and then have to interrupt you. It looks like we're headed in that direction. So stand by, Mary.
Yeah, let's take you live now to outside of the Pentagon. This is live coverage from 720 WGN. President Trump speaking on the anniversary of the 9/11 attack. Let's go to the Pentagon.
Well, thank you very much, Secretary Esper. Today, our nation honors and mourns the nearly 3,000 lives that were stolen from us on September 11th, 2001. On these grounds, 184 people were murdered when Al-Qaeda terrorists overtook American Airlines Flight 77 and crashed it into the Pentagon. For every American who lived through that day, the September 11th attack is seared into our soul. It was a day filled with shock, horror, sorrow, and righteous fury. I vividly remember when I first heard the news. I was sitting at home watching a major business television show early that morning. Jack Welch, the legendary head of General Electric, was about to be interviewed when all of a sudden, they cut away. At first, there were different reports. It was a boiler fire. But I knew that boilers aren't at the top of a building. It was a kitchen explosion in Windows on the World. Nobody really knew what happened. There was great confusion. I was looking out of a window from a building in Midtown Manhattan, directly at the World Trade Center, when I saw a second plane at a tremendous speed go into the second tower. It was then that I realized the world was going to change. I was no longer going to be, and it could never, ever be, that innocent place that I thought it was. Soon after, I went down to Ground Zero with men who worked for me to try to help in any little way that we could. We were not alone. So many others were scattered around trying to do the same. They were all trying to help. But for the families who join us, this is your anniversary of personal and permanent loss. It's the day that has replayed in your memory 1,000 times over. The last kiss, the last phone call, the last time hearing those precious words, "I love you." Then the attack, the anguish of knowing your family member had boarded one of these flights or was working in the World Trade Center or serving right here at the Pentagon. You waited, you prayed, you answered that most dreaded call, and your life changed forever. To each of you, the First Lady and I are united with you in grief. We come here in the knowledge that we cannot erase the pain or reverse the evil of that dark and wretched day. But we offer you all that we have, our unwavering loyalty, our undying devotion, and our eternal pledge that your loved ones will never, ever be forgotten. 18 years ago, the terrorists struck this citadel of power and American strength. But the enemy soon learned that they could not weaken the spirit of our people. In times of distress, the heart of the American patriot only grows stronger and more determined. Even in the midst of the attack, the world witnessed the awesome power of American defiance. 40 passengers and crew on Flight 93 rose up, fought back, and thwarted the enemy's wicked plans. In their final moments, these American heroes thunderously declared that we alone decide our fate. We saw American perseverance in the valiant New York firefighters, police officers, first responders, military, and everyday citizens who raced into the crashing towers to rescue innocent people. One such American was retired Army Colonel Rick Rescorla, who gave his life on 9/11. Rick earned the Silver Star and the Purple Heart for his service in Vietnam. He later became the Vice President for Security at Morgan Stanley in the World Trade Center. On the day of the attack, Rick died while leading countless others to safety. His selfless actions saved approximately 2,700 lives. Today, I'm honored to announce that we will soon be awarding the late Rick Rescorla the Presidential Citizens Medal for his extraordinary sacrifice. Though Rick has left this earth, we will ensure that the memory of his deeds will never, ever be forgotten. His memory will forever endure. Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Rick. Here on the western side of the Pentagon, we saw brave men and women rush into the fire and race into the scorching flames to rescue their colleagues. When evil seeks to do us harm, the incredible men and women of the United States military answer with unyielding valor and unstoppable resolve. Navy Admiral David Thomas crawled through live wires and helped lift a wall of debris to save the life of a colleague. As Admiral Thomas remembers, "It was the worst day of my life, but the heroism and selfless disregard I saw that horrible morning is forever burned in my heart." Admiral Thomas, America salutes you and every patriot who defied evil that day. Thank you very much, Admiral. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Army Ranger Chris Brayman repeatedly went back inside the burning building, rescuing one injured person after another. Before he entered, he said a prayer and asked God to give him strength, and then he dove into the suffocating smoke and fumes and flames. At the same time, Sheila Moody had just prayed that someone would find her. Then she heard Chris's voice. As Sheila says, God sent Chris as her guardian angel. To Sheila and Chris, America is strengthened by your goodness and your grace and your bravery. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. To fulfill our unbreakable promise to every survivor and family of 9/11, earlier this year, we fully reauthorized the Victims' Compensation Fund to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. Since September 11th, nearly 6 million young men and women have joined the United States Armed Forces. They have crossed seas, climbed mountains, trekked through deserts, and rushed into enemy compounds to face down the threat of radical Islamic terrorism. Nearly 7,000 service members have laid down their lives to protect our home, our flag, and our American way of life. American freedom survives only because there are patriots willing to sacrifice everything in its defense. No tribute is sufficient to convey the infinite depth of our nation's gratitude. On this solemn day of remembrance, our thoughts also turn to the 200,000 valiant soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, and Marines who are now at this very moment stationed overseas. We do not seek conflict, but if anyone dares to strike our land, we will respond with the full measure of American power and the iron will of the American spirit, and that spirit is unbreakable. We had peace talks scheduled a few days ago. I called them off when I learned that they had killed a great American soldier from Puerto Rico and 11 other innocent people. They thought they would use this attack to show strength, but actually what they showed is unrelenting weakness. The last 4 days, we have hit our enemy harder than they have ever been hit before, and that will continue.
You're listening to live coverage. This is President Trump speaking on the 9/11 anniversary from the Pentagon on.
And if for any reason they come back to our country, we will go wherever they are and use power the likes of which the United States has never used before. And I'm not even talking about nuclear power. They will never have seen anything like what will happen to them. No enemy on earth can match the overwhelming strength, skill, and might of the American armed forces. And we have rebuilt and strengthened in the last 2.5 years, spending $700 billion, $716 billion, and now just approved $738 billion, more money by far than ever spent on our armed forces. You are the fearless sentinels who stand watch over all that we cherish and everything we hold sacred, priceless, and dear. This morning, we also give thanks to the dedicated men and women at the Department of Homeland Security. Their department was created after 9/11 to help secure our immigration system and ensure that those who threaten our people are denied entry to our shores. We're indebted to every law enforcement official, state, local, and federal, who devotes their life to keeping America safe. As we gather at this moment and at this incredible memorial, we are reminded that there is no greater testament to our fallen heroes than the presence of their families who knew and loved them so much. Among the family members here today is Stephanie Dunn. Her husband, Navy Commander Patrick Dunn, was one of the patriots who gave his life right here 18 years ago. Before he left that morning, Patrick gave Stephanie a big, beautiful kiss. Then, for the first time, he leaned down and kissed her pregnant stomach. Stephanie was just 2 months along with their first child. Earlier this year, their daughter Allie celebrated her 17th birthday. Allie grew up into a strong, truly remarkable young woman. She mentors the children of our nation's wounded warriors. And recently, I was honored to give Allie the President's Volunteer Service Award for her hundreds of hours of community service. We are blessed to have Allie here with us at today's ceremony. Thank you, Allie. Thank you. Thank you, Coach. And Allie, I know your dad is watching over you. He's right up there. He's watching from heaven, looking down right now with love and pride. He is so proud of you. Thank you very much. Incredible. Also joining us is the Vigiano family. For generations, the Vigiano family has served in our military And in the New York City fire and police departments, these are two great departments. I grew up with them, I know. On September 11th, NYPD detective Joseph Vigiano rushed into the World Trade Center and died rescuing his fellow citizens. His brother John was a New York firefighter. He also gave his life that day at Ground Zero. At the time, Joseph's three sons were just young boys, ages 8, 6, and 3 months old. This morning, they are with us. The youngest, John, just started his freshman year of college at SUNY Maritime College, and he plans to join the military. Joseph Jr. is a Marine reservist, and just like his father, he is a proud member of the NYPD. And James is a corporal in the Marines. On his last deployment, James was stationed on the USS New York, a ship made using 24 tons of steel from the World Trade Center. Every time he left the mess hall on his way to his bunk, he passed a picture of his dad. To John, Joseph, and James, and to the Vigiano family, you have sacrificed beyond measure, and you will never, ever stop giving back to this country. And thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Very proud of you. Thank you. Thank you very much. The heroes present today remind us of an immortal truth. The future of our nation is secured through the vigilance of our people. The brave men and women who tore through the gates of hell to save the hurt and the wounded. The service members who honor the friends who perished by continuing their exceptional life of service. The moms and dads who endure the loss of their soulmates and fill their children's lives with all of the adoration in the world. The sons and daughters who suffered grave loss and yet through it all persevere to care for our neighbors, defend our homeland, and safeguard our nation. Each of your lives tells the story of courage and character, virtue and valor, resilience and resolve, loyalty and love. This morning, we make a sacred vow to carry on this noble legacy. Today and every day, we pledge to honor our history, to treasure our liberty, to uplift our communities, to live up to our values, to prove worthy of our heroes, and above all, stronger than ever, to never, ever forget. We are now and will forever be one American family, united by patriotism, bound by destiny, and sustained by the faith of Almighty God. Thank you. God bless you. God bless our military. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
President Trump completing remarks at the Pentagon, Steve, 18 minutes or so, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. He and Melania Trump standing in front of a giant flag that has been unfurled on the side of
Ladies
the Pentagon where the plane flew into the building 18 years ago.
And the speech itself can be reviewed and let's not interrupt this. Listen.
Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf?
Idly-ho, neighborinos.
We need two big pizzas, man. Everything on them.
Idaho, neighbor.
Nobody nothing in my neighborhood.
Hey, Ma! The meatloaf! We want it now! The meatloaf!
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Continuing now, we're going to get to Neighborhood Eats and also continuing coverage of 9/11. And I am being highly encouraged by people who work with me and who employ me to not say anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are.
We'll see if I can stick with it.
Yeah. I think we're all thinking the same thing as you're thinking about saying. So.
Yeah. And you made that promise at the top of the show.
Today. Was it a promise?
It was a promise. It was a binding contract.
But if I just state the facts, is
No. Between you and the listener.
Can we agree they're facts?
We can agree they're facts. Mm-hmm. You want to... Hey, on a positive note...
So I should take the high road?
Yes.
Where we're going?
Can I tell you about this week's Neighborhood Eats?
You better.
That should make you feel better.
You should probably do that right now.
I mean, you love French fries, right?
Who doesn't love French fries? If you don't like French fries, you should be at a checkup for the neck up.
Absolutely. And this elevates the humble French fry to the European version, pommes frites. And so I went to Freestyle.
And what is Freestyle?
It is a pommes frites specialty eatery, fast casual, and they do fresh cut, hand cut, prepared potatoes every day, Idaho russets, and double fried, and then on top you have toppings like you could get chicken wings and be bad, or have a version of a Chicago Italian beef on top with cheese on top of the fries.
They keep coming up with new stuff all the time. Endless possibilities.
Yeah, but you could also do healthy versions too, and of course to talk about it.
That?
Yeah, they have salmon.
Oh, well, I love salmon.
They have shrimp, lobster.
I love shrimp.
Fresh lobster, not frozen. And on the phone, we have owner Corey Gilkey to talk about Freestyle with us. Hey, Corey.
Hey, Steve and G. What's going on?
Corey, you're a madman. You've taken pommes frites to the next level.
That was our concept. That's what we wanted to do.
So tell me about the first time you sat around and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get in the restaurant business because I know that will nearly kill me.
It was just something I wanted to do. We've always worked hard as a company, and we want to feed our people and our communities better food and give them a different concept besides the same concepts that's already out there. Like, everybody's doing the same thing, fried chicken, frozen coated fries, or pizza, or hot dog, or hamburger. And we just want to give a spin and have be creative with it and give people fresher options.
I don't know how you do it at those price points, because what you're talking about is labor intensive and ingredient intensive, and I salute you for being able to make it affordable.
Well, we've been in business for 23 years, and it's all about plating and food costs. So as long as you manage that, and that we have great distributors like Gordon Foods where they help us with recipe manager, we'll know our costs and how much we'll make off of each entree, even with the forks, the napkins, the plates. So it's really running your business and managing it and being on top of your dollars every day.
Well, you mentioned being in business for over 20 years. Now, Freestyle has only just hit its one-year anniversary there in Bronzeville, though. But you are truly an experienced businessman, because you are actually the person behind Leaders 1354. They have a storefront in West Loop. It is a streetwear lifestyle brand, and you've got global reach through that company as well.
Yes, we do. We have global ambassadors. We've collaborated with some of the best brands, the most prolific brands, Nike, Adidas, New Era, Billionaire Boys Club, Chicago Blackhawks, Bud Light. So we've done a lot of work with all types of different people that have global reach.
So, Corey, can you describe sort of like what you guys carry at Leaders and then why you decided to move from retail to the restaurant world?
Well, we didn't really move to anything. We just diversified our portfolio, and we always wanted to get into food, clothing, and shelter. That's what people need. They need clothing, they need food, and they need shelter. So those are the things we want to invest in. But we got into it just because of exactly what we said. It was something that the community needed that we're in Bronzeville. Just the South Side, that being a South Side individual, we feel that, you know, a lot of people say that downtown or the North Side don't want to come out South. So we got to protect our South Side residents with better things to be involved with.
I don't buy that for a second. If you build it, they will come. This pommes frites story we're telling right now, you're going to have so many North Siders coming in, you're going to tell them to get out.
Well, we don't see as many north side. We see a little bit of everybody else. But, you know, that's a talk of town. People don't want to go past Roosevelt. They feel that we have nothing to offer on the south side.
Well, look, if you don't check out these palm frites, then, again, I'm going to need to see your papers.
When you come in over.
Well, I might be there before the end of the show, and we're on until 10.
But, Corey, talk a little bit about what makes it so special, because everything's fresh. Nothing's frozen. You know, you get fresh seafood deliveries every day. The lobster portion, the salmon portion, it's pretty incredible.
Yes, it is. You already explained it. Like, we do fresh food. We don't want anything that's frozen. We don't want anything that's packaged frozen with preservatives. We really care about our people, and like my chef Oscar will always say, is that you don't feed anybody anything which you wouldn't feed your mom, and that's a great slogan.
That's a great policy. I mean, you know, you're not going to poison mom.
Yeah, exactly.
What is your favorite on your menu?
My favorite is everything, because I have to say that. But honestly, I like the salmon, the lamb, the wings. Those three are my go-to. If I'm eating at my own restaurant.
Well, I am coming to see you. Don't you challenge me. I'm coming to see you.
I'm challenging you. Come on.
I'm coming to see you, man.
Everyone that comes to the restaurant has their own favorite. Like, most love our Italian beef with the giardiniera cheese and peppers, and most love. A lot of people love our chicken Alfredo. And a lot of people love our lobster, our Caribbean shrimp.
You know, it's funny.
People love a little bit of everything.
Everybody, you know, you take a pile of nacho chips, and people aren't surprised at all. Put anything on it, right? I mean, there's prime rib nachos. There's, you know, anything possible. Palm frites needs to be done this way. Fries need to be done this way. I salute you, my friend.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to meet you and you come to the restaurant so we can blow your mind.
Corey, last question is it harder to sell palm frites and be in the restaurant business, or is it harder to sell t-shirts, hats, sneakers?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
It's real work. By the way, I heard you were a heck of a baseball player.
Yes, I was.
And what kept you in business and out of baseball?
I just didn't get drafted. At that time, I'm a little bit older. I went to a historical black college, and Major League Baseball just wasn't drafting players out of historical black colleges at that time.
Well, where'd you go? You went Grambling, or where'd you go?
I went to Southern University in Baton Rouge. Sure. We used to destroy Grambling.
It's a great school.
Yeah. They all are. Jackson State, Texas Southern, Howard.
Sure, sure.
Tuskegee. I can name on name a bunch of schools, and you know the classic is this weekend between Howard and Hampton, so you guys should definitely go out there and check that out. It's going to be a great energy going around that. And at the store, we're doing a pop-up with AACA clothing, African Allegiance clothing brand. We're doing a pop-up in the store, so come through and see what we have to service at the store as well as the restaurant this weekend for the classic.
How about that? Getting it done. My man!
Yeah, always working.
My man!
Welcome to this pricing course.
Hello? Hello? I don't know what we're welcoming to the pricing course.
I have no idea, but I do want to let everybody know. Leaders 1354.
Welcome to this.
So, where's that coming from?
Is at 1152 West Madison Street in the West Loop. So that's where the pop-up is going to be happening this weekend. And a freestyle palm frites extraordinaire.
Address?
It is 5059 South Prairie Avenue.
And, gee, don't forget, we got a Boxville market today also. So,
yes.
If you get time, come to Boxville, our shipping container community we do in the Bronzeville area on 51st and Calumet.
It's really cool. It's basically a marketplace made up of various shipping containers that are totally all different bright colors.
How many different Corey Gilkeys are there? He can't be everywhere at one time.
He's investing a lot into the community. It's pretty incredible.
You. Good for you, man. God bless you, Corey. Great work.
Thank you, sir. Can't wait to see you, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting you. All right. My man and his palm frites. All right, we going straight to the news? Taking a break, then the news on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
All right, 9:44, we continue with show number 1,448. And you know what, Super Joe? Grab that Springsteen record we talked about earlier. We'll play something for you before 10 o'clock, which seems to be fitting. Let's cheer up a little. How about that?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little canine companions. Dave, you love dogs.
I do love dogs.
I love dogs.
I do, too. I love dogs.
Well, everybody loves dogs. We'd like to bring in somebody that loves dogs more than all of us, and that would be Katie Sandberg. You may know the last name because Katie Sandberg's sister is Mary Sandberg, who's now a big shop boss here, and it treats us all poorly.
She's not that big of a deal.
It's not that true. How are you?
Good, good. How are you guys?
Great to see you.
Great to see you as well.
Introduce the man to your left.
This is Philip Emery. He's owner of Tales in the City, the coolest dog boutique store in the Gold Coast.
All right, so canine companions. Look, we all should know that dogs are wonderful and dogs make your life better. But canine companions specifically is what?
Canine companions is changing people's lives. Canine Companions provides highly trained assistance dogs to children, adults, and veterans with disabilities free of charge. It's a $50,000 investment in each one of the dogs.
To make sure they're properly trained?
Correct. Not only trained, but through breeding, training, the life of the dog with the recipient, and then into retirement. So it's a 12 to 14 year commitment right. that this organization has with each and every dog. There are multiple sites that they have throughout the United States. Columbus is the one that we're associated with, but they originated in Santa Rosa, California. Okay. They have seven training facilities.
What would a canine companion typically do for a child?
Depending on their
need.
Yeah, their disability or their need, like help them open the door, like be able to attend school in a public setting, you know, pick up pencils, different things like that.
So it could be a visually impaired kid or a kid with emotional difficulties?
Actually, it's the only, vision is the only one that they're not, this organization isn't trained
for. I guess not because you have specific dogs for that particular thing.
But yeah. emotional or, you know, any other physical disability, you know, if they're in a wheelchair and things like that.
So it's similar throughout the ages. It wouldn't change necessarily.
Absolutely.
It's whatever a person needs.
Correct.
It allows them to be independent.
Yeah, and it also depends on each one of the recipients. Each person comes to Canine Companions for an assistance dog, but each one of them comes with their own needs. And so they really make sure that that dog is trained for that particular
I was
going to
say, do you match dogs that you have for those needs, or do you train a dog once you know that need is there?
The latter. You train the dog based on the needs of the recipient.
Wow. Well, of course, they're helping out with all of these physical needs and, you know, getting through day-to-day life, but always, always they're there for the emotional needs, because having a dog is just the most incredible thing for anybody.
Yeah, look how happy Davis.
100%.
I think the most fascinating thing about these particular dogs and an individual that is in a wheelchair is the dog opens up a door for people to approach them, mm-hmm. where they may have never approached someone in a wheelchair before because it's very uncomfortable.
To have a conversation.
Exactly. So it really is not only helping that individual, but it's opening up the door.
It's cool. That's a great point. It's a really cool point because people don't know what to say.
Yeah.
That is a good point, actually. Yeah.
Are there particular breeds and or sizes that
we breed at our Canine Companions? They breed Goldens and Labs and a mixture of Golden and Lab. And through this organization, I learned that apparently the best is the combination of the two, because Labs have a little too much energy for the job. And Goldens don't have the best work ethic all the time.
Goldens are all lazy and love, right? Just want to be petted and hang out with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is lovely, too.
Dave is a little dog guy.
Well, I have a little dog, but I like all size dogs.
Yes. But Ozzy weighs about 14 ounces, right?
He weighs about 21 pounds.
21 pounds. Can smaller dogs be of assistance?
Maybe in other organizations. And maybe as an emotional support animal, but not with Canine Companions. They are very specific. They only use their own dogs. They have their own they have their own breeding facility out in California at the training center.
How do you know a dog's capable of it?
Some actually are not capable of it. Excuse me. They are raised by a puppy raiser for the first 18 months, and they go through basic behavior and training through that person. And then they are turned over to the training facility in Columbus, for example. And they sometimes do fail. They
they have to reach certain markers.
Sort of like Navy SEAL training. Not everyone's built for the end result.
Right.
So
maybe they don't get out of buds.
So, Katie, how did you get involved with this organization? And then tell us about the event, too, that you guys have.
So 4 years ago, in the beginning of the organization, Philip and Bruce, who own Tales in the City, which was Biscuit, my Biscuit's Cheers bar, asked if Biscuit would walk in the fashion show, which this.
Which, by the way, we saw the pictures of.
Isn't it amazing?
Fantastic.
Yes, goat. But so it's this September 19th at the Peninsula, and it is a dog fashion show, and that's what Biscuit walked in. And when we came to the event, I saw someone in a wheelchair with a service dog, and I thought nothing of it. And then I think I saw another like puppy in training. I was like, hey, what is this actually about? I wasn't aware of the organization.
And you dove in.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a totally super cool event, dog fashion show. Featuring by Fashionaholics is dressing the human models. Birdie is dressing the, I guess, male models.
How many dogs in the show?
We have 20 dogs. Some of them are going to be puppies from Canine Companions, and then some of them are full-grown dogs.
Do the dogs have any, you know, a supermodel like diva behaviors in backstage?
Some do.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of them do. It's like a cat fight almost.
Yeah.
20 dogs like a cat fight.
Yeah.
So, G?
What can we do to help? And then how much money is raised throughout this incredible event?
So, like Philip was saying, it's $50,000 for a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And last year we raised $50,000. Our goal this year is to get two dogs sponsored. So $100,000.
So if we can't make the fashion show, then is there a place we can go to help?
Yeah, there is. And I'm glad you asked. So to buy tickets or to make a donation, you can go to cci.org/hotdogchicago. And hot is actually spelled H-A-U-T.
As in hoot.
As in hoot.
Yes.
Dog. Chicago.
All right, let's do that again. CCI Chicago.
CCI.org.
.org.
/ H-A-U-T-E D-O-G C-H-I-C-A-G-O.
So we're going to put that up so people can link to that directly.
And then you can take donations, too, if people
can't make
the event.
Yeah, donations. You can buy a ticket for a recipient. You can buy a ticket for yourself. You can make a donation.
It's a super fun event to attend.
Sure.
But
really
even
is.
If you don't attend it, it's a wonderful organization, obviously. And we have a veteran coming who's a recipient this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, to speak.
He has an amazing story, you know, and it's so moving to hear.
I didn't think about
stories.
That. With PTSD treatment, that kind of thing?
Actually, no. He is physically impaired.
Okay.
So the dog that he has, Rue, and his name is Jason, they will both be speaking about
That's
their
great.
Story and telling everyone in the audience how they became associated with Canine Companions.
Right, now, that's not might not be the right word for it, but is it intellectual capability in the dog that allows them to be trained this way, or is it just a physical instinct where one is above another?
No, I think that it's...
I mean, a dog's got to be smart.
Well, and the dog needs to want to do the job, you know, and that's kind of their tagline, give a dog a job. And so they try to match up that dog with maybe what Katie needs as an individual recipient.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and you know,
I'm
not
sure.
Katie, but anyone.
We'll have your sister here and fill that punchline up.
Sorry. Where's Mary?
I'm special.
No.
All right, so you can help at the fashion show, but you can help any time of the year. What about volunteers? Do you guys need volunteers for various things?
We need volunteers throughout the year, and puppy raisers always. We have so many amazing people that have raised over 20 dogs for Canine Companions.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Crazy.
It really is incredible.
Families that have had dogs for 18 months and then you turn it over and you get another puppy and they've done that in 20 years.
How many dogs have you guys placed at this point in time now?
I think it was 3,500 last year.
Wow.
Okay.
I think. Now, I might be wrong because now I don't know.
We'll say
3,500.
But it is amazing. Yeah, and they have graduation ceremonies three times a year at all their training facilities. And if you can't attend our event at the Peninsula on the 19th, try to attend one of those graduations.
Aww.
You will be hooked in on this organization.
No kidding. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
And what's the name of your place again?
Tales in the City.
Tales in the City.
One East Delaware.
One East Delaware.
Or you can shop online at talesinthecity.com. Thanks, Steve.
You bet. And Katie, we don't need to probe Katie's business. One, because it's illegal, and two, because she does very well.
got it.
We'll come back with your news. All right. You know, one of the toughest things about 9/11, you think about the families, and the families who remain and survive and lost somebody they love. Bruce Springsteen did an album called The Rising, which was almost completely about his own feelings about what happened on 9/11. We don't have time, unfortunately, to play this whole song, but I want to play a piece of it for you. And yeah, it'll probably make you cry. It usually does with me.
God's drifting in heaven. Devil's in the mailbox. I got dust on my shoes. Nothing but teardrops.
If you really want to feel it today, I'd recommend listen to that entire album. It's hard, man. It's hard. You know, and we're all ought to be counting our blessings. Hug your kids, your wife, your husband. Hug everybody. Hug strangers. Stop them on the street. But you still live in the greatest country in the world. Don't forget that. And let's all try to get along a little better than we do. What are you guys doing today? Obviously this, but what else?
Terrorism expert Tom Mikaitis, who's been a frequent guest on the show, will be on to talk a lot about September 11th, but most notably what has changed in the 18 years since it all took place.
We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll get back to whatever it is we normally do. And I'll give you my full review of the president's remarks tomorrow, but not today.
All right.
Attaboy.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.